And welcome back to Amanda here on CKUT 90.3. It's 7:29 in the studio. And I'm joined tonight by Roberto Nieto and also Marcia Ribeiro, who both of them went together through Africa for how long, Roberto?
We were there for just over 4 months.
That's right, and recording interviews with activists across the continent.
Exactly. We went down there on a kind of mission to go and meet local activists and members of all sorts of different organizations. And so the first leg of our trip was going down to South Africa and meeting different members of who are organizations who are fighting privatization, because there's a kind of strong movement against privatization in South Africa. The South African government has gone the way of neoliberal policies, and so a lot of people have had their basic services cut, electricity, water, and also housing has been a big issue. Actually, housing has been one of the major issues ever since the ANC got elected in 94, because it had promised, house, I think, over 1 million people who had no houses. So they went ahead with all sorts of different housing plans. But a lot of them have ended up in a mess. Major leader was the RDP, Reconstruction and Development Program, which, there's a lot of houses in South Africa that are called RDP houses.
Like social housing?
Yeah,
basically?
Kind of. Well, social housing, but actually these houses are basically like a small shack with one larger room and like two small rooms, and the house looks like a card box, or and it's very small. And so the government has gone ahead with this plan to help people, but the way it's done it is by lending money, and so people have got houses thinking that these houses were free, but they ended up getting in debt and losing jobs. And so there's thousands upon thousands of people who are now in debt and who have less than a house, because they owe a debt and a house. They have no house and they owe a debt. And this is happening all through southern South Africa. So one of the people we met, and this is the next piece we'll hear, is Ashraf Kasim, who is one of the founders of the anti-eviction campaign in and around Cape Town, the Western Cape area. And so this was one of the more interesting interviews we had with a local activist, a really grassroots activist. And, in relation to your previous piece in Kenya, we thought we'd play this tonight.
Thank you so much, Roberto and Marcia, for bringing this in. Let's play the interview, and then we'll come back and we'll use whatever time we have to talk a little bit more about evictions in South Africa.
Okay, my name is Ashraf Kasim. In 2000, October 2000, I was on my way to work. I'm a computer operator, mainframe computer operator. That was the job that I had. On my way to work, I went to the corner to get a taxi. And on the corner, there was this hustle and stuff and all the people standing around. And then I went to this house. I saw that they wanted to evict a pensioner and his family. They wanted to throw him out of his house with a paper as well, like they came here now, but they didn't come with that paper. The paper said, like, according to Act 32 of 1944, he has to be out in 5 minutes' time, and they started carrying out his furniture. And then we stopped him. We asked him what they're doing. I asked him what they're doing, and said they can't, because this is the year 2000. This is not 1944, you know. These things used to happen, it doesn't happen anymore. So they must go back to council, send a council representative to come and negotiate. Firstly, because the person that they want to evict cannot read or write. So she doesn't, or he, they don't understand this paper that you brought to them. They just know that you want to evict them. And they don't want to be evicted, because this guy was crying, you know, with Charlie. He was crying, this pensioner, and he's crippled as well. He's a paraplegic. He was in a wheelchair for 3 years, and he managed to recuperate on his own, you know, with his own will, you know, he managed to get out of the wheelchair. And then I told him, I asked him, look, do you want me to negotiate for you? Then he said, yeah, you know, you're my lawyer, you know, and, you know, you're the one that I can depend on. You know, I know him for like 20 years. They've been living in that house for 22 years. And then I took his hand and I put it in my pocket. And then I said, right, whoever's speaking to him is speaking to me. I will do the negotiate, you know, we will negotiate. I will do the talking because I understand what you're saying. I will explain to him, he will respond, and I will then respond. They weren't impressed. And then we chased them away. We carried the furniture back into the home. The community started gathering at the place, and then we had them occupy the house. Just get into the house. The sheriff of the court and law enforcement came, and they said, like, we must disperse, and da-da-da, and we didn't, nobody was listening. They were laughing at them, and, like, please go and go get some real people to come and evict these people. And then they called the police. They called the local police first, the local SAPS, South African Police Services, locally. They called the public order police. They called the army. They called the dog unit. They called about 6 or 7 different units of law enforcement in South Africa, you know. And so then each time an inspector would come, would want to have him sign this document, then we'll say no, and we'll tear it up. Then a different unit would come, the inspector would come, the inspector would get in, and then we'll tear it up. And we don't want to negotiate with you. It's got nothing to do with you. This is not about law enforcement. This is about this man's home. It's his heritage, you know. There's a 2-month-old baby in this house, you know. Where do they go to? If you have alternate accommodation, then please show us where it is. And they didn't have this alternate accommodation, and they didn't have all this. So then it was a standoff. You know, we just occupied the house and the premises and the whole road, and, you know, and then it was like about 60 cars and trucks, and it was about 6 dogs. So they came onto the premises with these dogs. I can remember they put my jacket and 2 places on my jacket and so on. And then I said, no, we're still not going to move, you know. You can occupy the house. We will surround the house, you know. So we shared the space for a while, and people were, like, physically harassed out of the house. Like, the army came into the house and, like, kicked and hit and boxed the people out of the house, and it was, like, all rough things. And then we were standing on the pavement. And that's when one of the young, it was a young policeman, he was a sergeant, and he grabbed me, and he wanted to, like, he said, no, you must come with us, you are talking, you speak too much, you know, you're not a good person to be staying here. And then they wanted to, like, arrest me, and then I said, no, wait, I'm not going anywhere, and I resisted, and then all the people started coming to my rescue. They, like, wanted to grab me away, and but then they hit me, like, over my head. I had about 24 knobs in my head. And the dog, they put the dog on me. The dog bit me on my arm. And then they, like, kicked me and hit me. They took turns kicking me and hitting me. Because now, like, the army was around us. The people were outside, and they started firing on the people, like, shotguns and live ammunition and so on. And then every time I would come loose, and they would get me again, and they would hit me again, and they would, like, hold me and hit me and kick me, and, like, a bit faint. Then I didn't want to go anywhere, because I didn't do anything wrong. Every time I would come by, I would ask them, like, listen, what's the problem? Why are you guys hitting me? You know, what did I do? And they couldn't answer me, so I would, like, go on with this rhetoric. I would, like, really piss them off. And then they just come back at me, and they would, like, and then at one time I got away from them. I was, like, about 3 meters away from them, and then I was running, and I thought, no, I can't run anywhere. There's nowhere to run. Our doors are like paper. If I'm going to run into a house, they'll, like, just walk through the door. So then I just stood and I said, look, I didn't do anything. You're going to take me, we're going to go, you know, I'm going to go. But then they all, like, about 19 of them were standing across the road. And they came running towards me because the captain said, why are you letting that man go? Catch him! And then they all came. And then they kicked me again. They dragged me and whatever. And then my mother came. And my mother was like, physically fell onto me. And so they kicked her, and she had a heart attack on the day. She had a stroke and a mild heart attack. Ambulance had to come. They threw her into into the police van. So then they eventually got us into the van, and we went to the court. We went to the police station. But it was like, when we were on our way to the police station, it was like, it was like really a million cars and trucks and private police. And there was some police, as a matter of fact, that didn't want to participate. They refused to take the order from the captain because there were too many people and I was one person, you know. So they pointed out, look, like, you got it under control, you know. Why do you need us? You know, that's one person. And then six of us were arrested. Actually, five of us were arrested. The sixth person that was arrested, he went to the police station to lay a charge because they also kicked him. So when he was trying to lay a charge, they arrested him from the desk there where he was trying to lay a charge, and they threw him into the cell. And I was bleeding, and I was like totally like bashed up, and so I couldn't go into the cells because I cannot allow blood like to go into the cell. And then I eventually went to the local clinic, the hospital that is there, and I got some injection. They wanted to do stitches, and I said, no, I don't want stitches for my dog bite. It's fine. They gave me injection. I got some tablets. I got some stuff for the bruises, and my back was bruised. My clothes were broken. My shoes were broken. Everything was like, I was like in tatters. My clothing, everything, and my body especially, like, like now my hip is higher than the one hip is higher than the other. I have kidney problems, and I mean, like, all the stuff happened because of that encounter with the policeman. Then what happened then is that I went into the cell eventually. The cell was like with about 35 people in it, 35 gangsters and rapists and whatever, you know, whoever got arrested that day. So the guys in charge said, hello, brothers, don't talk to that man. That man is with me, you know. He's protecting our homes, you know. He's protecting our parents' homes, and he's doing this kind of thing. So I was like quite a hero, you know. So it had the opposite effect, rather, that what the policeman thought would happen, you know. So that had a different effect, because they were like more supportive. They gathered blankets to have me sit on it, and, you know, I had cigarettes. I had my own cigarette. You know, in a jail cell, you can't just smoke a cigarette. You have to share with everybody. But I had my own cigarette. I had my own chair made with blankets. I was like totally cool. So that was the jail. And then about 8:30 the evening, the policeman came and he said, look, Ashraf, you have to go now. And so I said, no, I'm going nowhere. We were six of us. So if I leave, the other five will come with me. He said, no, you have to leave. So I didn't know what was happening. But then when I went, when I didn't want to go. So then a lawyer came, an advocate that my sister organized. My sister organized an advocate to come and speak to me. So I didn't want to speak to the advocate because was speaking to me. He wasn't speaking to all of us, you know. So I said, no, we are six. There are three women and there are three men, you know. Can you maybe speak to all of us? They said, no, I'm just here for you. And I said, no, okay, then I don't want you, you know. I want somebody that's going to be representing all of us. So then the commanding officer of the police station came and he said, look, Ashraf, you have to leave now, you know. I cannot hold you here for any longer. So I said, you cannot hold me. Why can you hold the others? So then they said, no, the others, we have to process them. And so on. So I said, but I haven't been processed, you know. And then eventually they agreed that all six of us would go. You know. So when we came outside, it was our community that occupied the police station and outside and everything and everywhere and the officers. And, you know, they occupied the police station. The only place they couldn't come in is into the cells. but they occupied the whole police station. And it was like 10 o'clock at night. And you know where we live and where the police station is? They walked down there. So they marched to the police station and they got the people back into their house, and there's some people protecting that people and the people that came down to the police station to demand our release. So that's the only reason why they wanted to release us, because they couldn't get their work done. They couldn't get no work done because people were sitting on the floor. And so when we came out, it was like this hero's welcome, Nelson Mandela coming out of prison. You know, it was really overwhelming for me, you know, because I didn't expect him. I mean, like, the officer is like 20 minutes walk from where the thing is. But anyway, then we came out and everybody walked. We marched back to Tafelsig in the road, and it was like a fun time. We enjoyed ourselves. The council came to the house and they put on burglar bars so that we couldn't enter. So then we got somebody else that does welding and stuff to cut off the locks and the stuff, and we put them back into the house. So the people stayed in the house for the day. Securities came, but they went very quick because then the gangsters and the people, the community, threatened them with guns and stuff, and so they couldn't come back into the community. And ever since that day, nobody has been evicted, you know, because the community has that feeling. They know that it's wrong to be evicted, you know. Ashraf went to prison for this, you know, and he came out the very same day. So I went to court the next day. But that is my story, how I got brutalized. The very next day, the morning, we had to go to court. That was the condition that they released us. We had to appear in court the next day. So we went to court with the masses, with the people. So it got postponed. Got postponed for another month. Got postponed about 6 times eventually. And got thrown out of court. And what happened is that the next day, we got together, the 6 of us that got arrested, and we were talking about, like, how are we going to take this further? Because now I can't go work. My face looked like this, and my arm was swollen up, and my back is bruised. I cannot sit on my bums. The back of my feet were, you know, bruised, and my whole body was like, so I was like, just like a patient, you know. Okay. And then what happened is that people from all over Cape Town, they started calling my mother's house, and like, because they saw the paper, and you know, and they contacted the newspaper, and the newspaper gave the thing. And then I went, also the newspaper article wasn't very correct, because they were talking about gangsterism, and you know, it wasn't, because on the day, let me say, on the day that the eviction happened, gangsters from I told you there's like different gangsters. All of these gangsters came together and protected this house. They did not fight each other. They had a common goal, they had a common cause, man. You know, they all stood together, like Americans, the young Americans, the hard livings, the Wonder Boys, and all the different gangs worked together. And they protected this house, which was a good thing, you know, because then there was no more shooting, and, you know, there was for quite some time after that, you know, so it was like peace. It was like a unspoken peace that happened among the gangs in the area. So that was a good thing. But then the next day, as I was saying, we had to organize a meeting of all these people. And like, the people that was with me wasn't very knowledgeable of how to do these things and so on. You know, they don't have the past that I have, you know. Like, I was in organization. I was in the ANC, as a matter of fact. I was in COSAS, Congress of South African Students. I was in, you know, I participated in politically. It was political activity in my life before the eviction. So then I got 2 of my friends from outside Tafelsig to come and assist. So we started this a survey form to find out who else is in this predicament that Mr. Lategan was in. Okay, we tried to establish that kind of information. So we did the survey. We called it the Heisbesoek. It was like 6-7 of us, and then we became more and more and more and more and more, and eventually we did the whole of Tafelsig. So we had all the surveys information, and we didn't even process it. But we had this information, and everybody noticed that everybody is in the same position. Like, everybody that's doing the interviews with these people said the same thing, you know. Like, does it? And it took months to do this. It wasn't like something that happened overnight. It took, we went like on a Monday morning and on a Tuesday afternoon and on a Wednesday, you know, every day we did a piece by piece. And we got some volunteers from all over South Africa, as a matter of fact, to come and assist us with that process. Some guys from the movement, there's a movement called The Movement. They would ask, like, do you know of anybody being evicted? They would offer to go and live at these people's house, sleep in a corner with their sleeping bag and their food in a packet, and they would sleep in a corner just to be there the next day when the eviction would happen. So that's the kind of stuff that we would do, you know, like, and if somebody was evicted, we would just put them back into their house, and, you know, we would frustrate the whole system. But meanwhile, we were, like, gathering momentum, because now every day my house would be full. People with similar problems would line up in front of my door and stuff. Then we had a meeting. We launched Tafel Sig anti-eviction campaign in our community center. That's when we got the people from all the different areas to attend. So then I was the chairperson of Tafel Sig anti-eviction campaign at that time, of course, and we introduced this anti-eviction campaign to everybody there. We explained to them what we do, how we do it, why we do it, why it's necessary to do it, what is the pro-poor policy, what is the indigent policy. So then I started gathering information. That is why I know all these things, because I've been collecting all this information all the time. And yeah, so we had this launch, and it was fantastic, because the hall, the community hall, was too small for the people that was present. And then people from Lavender Hill, they were that side where Musenberg is, from Molniton, white area, like where there are poor whites, you know, poor white people, and from all the different African townships, you know, they all heard about what was happening and stuff. And then we arranged a separate meeting with just the coordinators and the representatives from all the different communities. So then we started the Western Cape anti-eviction campaign. That's when we launched the Western Cape anti-eviction campaign, with all these different areas coming together. So in some areas there are anti-eviction campaigns, in some areas there are organizations that exist, but they conform, they follow anti-eviction campaign principles, you know. And so they do the same thing anyway.
And we were just listening to Dao Ningriha, one of Claudel's favorite CDs, a song called Naja. Some beautiful music here at CKUT. We have precisely 4 minutes left on Amanla, and we have with us in the studio Marcia Ribeiro and also Roberto Nieto. And I should just say, before asking Roberto to talk a tiny bit more about the piece in the remaining 2 minutes, that Roberto and Marcia's work, they have extensive radio interviews that we're going to play throughout the next little while, and we'll have them back in the studio to talk in more detail about some of the things that came up during your trip. So I guess just to kind of end tonight off, is there something that really, that Ashraf said in your interview, or something that really sticks out to you that you want to bring up?
Well, I just want to come back on some of what he said. He said this is, you know, how the anti-eviction campaign started. That's a campaign that, people saw what happened to Ashraf, him getting beaten up. They saw that on the news, and it's the word spread, and people started calling him, and he started being the center of activity of this fight against, against the evictions, but also mostly against the corporate takeover of this part of what is the public good in a way, you know, what belongs to people at their houses, and the basic services that they have. So so you know, there's a lot more that he has to say about all of these different issues. There's a lot to say about the banks that mm-hmm. are involved in this, taking back houses, buying houses that have been taken away from people for the amount sometimes of $2, because nobody knows about this fraudulent exercise that is done in courthouses all around the country. And talking to Ashraf, we gradually started to understand how this system works and how thousands upon thousands of people are losing their houses each month in South Africa and are getting just thrown out anywhere. Mm-hmm. And this is going on. And while this is going on, there is something called the South African Constitution, which is supposed to protect people, protect people's basic rights. And there was just, this is what I'm going to say to end, there was a court ruling while we were there saying that, they didn't have the government or the state or, doesn't have the right to just get rid of people and if they don't have any place to stay. The government has to have some kind of alternative mm-hmm. Housing for people. So this is a whole new development in this whole mm-hmm. fight. But anyway, we can talk about that in the next few weeks.
Yeah, we'll definitely make the time for it. It's interesting how often the South African Constitution comes up, actually, when we discuss activism in South Africa, which is definitely really, really vibrant. Just some very quick announcements before we end. Next